You're listening to the Buckeye Visualist Podcast Show.
With the musical backdrop of the Pittsburgh Labor Choir singing their own rendition of Take Me Out to the Ball Game, you heard U.S. Representative Summer Lee and Pittsburgh News Guild President Zach Tanner speak out during a union-sponsored rally held outside of the Hall of States building in D.C. in March. They joined striking Pittsburgh Post-Gazette workers and their supporters to demand C-SPAN remove Alan Block from its board of directors. If you don't know already, the Blocks own the Post-Gazette and the Toledo Blade, both which are currently working without a contract. So it makes sense that the News Guild is taking great offense to Block being on the board of C-SPAN. The Block brothers, Alan and John, are union busters. FYI, Alan has been on the board since 1991, and yes, he's still on it according to its website. You are listening to the Buckeye Visualist, a podcast for members of the Ohio News Photographers Association, and on this episode, we are going to talk about unions, what news guilds are, how they protect workers, and how to support and fight for unions in your newsrooms. I'm your host, Lori King, and joining me on this very special episode are three photojournalists who are also members of their local news guilds, Jenna Watson, Kurt Stice, and Alexandra Wimley. Alexandra, let's start with you, considering you've been on strike for 6 months now, and we're at that rally in D.C. In fact, you were there as a striker and assigned to visually document it for the union progress. But before we get into the heart of the matter, let's learn a little bit about you. You hail from Louisiana and have a degree in journalism with a concentration in photojournalism from Boston University. Before joining the Post-Gazette, she was a visual journalist with the USA Today Network in Wisconsin and worked in Chicago as a photo intern for the Chicago Tribune in the summer of 2017. She was a member of the 2019 Pulitzer Prize-winning staff for breaking news for their coverage of the massacre at the Tree of Life Synagogue, where 11 people died that day in a mass shooting. Now, let's get to it. Members all over the country are either working without a contract or don't have one at all. Can you give us a brief synopsis about the plight of your union at the Post-Gazette?
The News Guild at the Post-Gazette has been really strong over the past couple decades. Before I was even in journalism, the News Guild has been fighting for the protections that we have had, particularly before our contract expired in 2017. The short of it is our contract expired in 2017, and the company has refused to bargain to reach an agreement to another contract. Since then, they imposed conditions on us, which means they can strip away all of those protections that have been earned over the years whenever they want with no recourse. So in October of last year, our sister unions, which are the folks who work in advertising, distribution, mailing, the delivery drivers, basically the folks who put the paper together, went on strike on their own because the company took away their health care and wanted to force them onto a high deductible healthcare plan that would basically amount to a huge pay cut for these folks when they have to reach this extremely high deductible every single year just to pay for basic healthcare. 2 weeks later, those of us in the newsroom joined them on our own strike, and we have been on strike since then, reaching just about 7 months now.
Wow.
And what we're all frustrated by is, yes, this is our fair contract that we're fighting for. We're frustrated that it's been a couple years and we still haven't gotten the contract we've been pushing for. And we want those things for ourselves, but more than anything, we want them for the future. Because what this story has been for the last decade, for the last several decades, it's not about the people here. We're doing okay. It's about the future. And it's about the autonomy of local journalism and being able to stay here and tell the stories about our community in our community.
That was Jenna behind the megaphone at the 2-year anniversary of working without a contract. It was last September, and many employees clocked out during their lunch hour to rally in downtown Indianapolis. Their contract expired in September of 2020. Jenna is a staff photojournalist at the Indianapolis Star and president of CWA 34070, a union local that represents journalists at the Indy Star and the Louisville Courier-Journal. She was born and raised near Kent, Ohio, and graduated with a bachelor's degree in photojournalism from Kent State University in 2015, which is also my alma mater. Before joining the Star full-time in 2016, she interned at the Grand Forks Herald, the Columbus Dispatch, and the Star. Jenna, can you share with us what it's been like working with an expired contract? What's the mood at the place?
Yeah, of course. So when I came to the Star, you know, we were under contract, and we've had a guild at the Star for years and years and years, since the 1930s. So, you know, we have a really well-established union in that sense, and we have a really high dues-paying rate. So lots of support for our union there. But, you know, as I started at the Star in 2016, and as the years went on, I did become more involved, and I could sense that, you know, the relationship with the company, especially at the bargaining table, and, you know, as far as our contract goes, was worsening and was, you know, becoming more difficult. And we were having a harder and harder time doing what used to be really accepted practice, right? Negotiating our contract and working together and really negotiating to come to an agreement on one. And so, you know, I had become more involved by the time we started bargaining in September 2020, which is when our contract last expired. And when we did return to the bargaining table, we came ready. We, you know, anticipated the company would show up in a, you know, respectable way and work with us and be fair. And it's been a lot of slow walking since then. And that's a trend across all of Gannett. So, you know, Indianapolis Star is part of Gannett, the USA Today Network is sometimes known as. And so it's a trend. It's not just us, but it's really difficult. You know, it's demoralizing. I think it's some days it's easy to feel like we'll never get there. And so we're lucky in the sense that we work under this evergreen contract that does afford us quite a few really strong protections, but it's really demoralizing to feel like we're not heard, to feel like we put in really strong effort in trying to think about this, you know, in our free time, right? We meet up after our shifts and to come to the table and feel like it's a joke at times. So yeah, it's been really difficult.
Okay, Kurt, you attended OSU, but don't get too excited, Buckeye Nation, because in his case, it stands for Oklahoma State University. He was a student staffer and editor of the Ocali, the student newspaper, and graduated with a bachelor's degree in multimedia journalism in May of 2017. He also attended the Eddie Adams workshop that same year. Which has been without a contract since 2017. In fact, shortly after you were hired, the Blade's contract expired. What has it been like working most of the time you've been there without a working contract?
It's been since 2002 that we haven't had an across the borderies. And Lori, I know you were at the Blade for 20 years. 26 years, yeah. And you've seen the concessions that we've had to give up. And
We've given up. Our pay raises ceased because through the union, we used to get raises every 6 months, if you can believe that. Healthcare costs increased. And now we're getting decreases in our pay. When I first started there, I was making $28 an hour. And now when I left, I was making $22. So, you know, $6 an hour deduction over, you know, 26 years, that hurts.
And it's just not getting the respect from the other side of the table when people are, I'm not on the committee itself for the bargaining, but when I've sat in on the bargaining, just seeing the company attorney and all that, you know, kind of almost making a mockery of, you know, the true efforts that our guild is trying to make it better for people to stay. You know, we've been hemorrhaging people. We've been losing a lot of people, and I think that's a lot of because of the conditions of the newsroom. You know, we want to have a place that people want to stay and, you know, get paid fairly and all that. So.
And Jenna, can you give us a bit of an insight into the broader strokes of Gannett and how it deals with unions?
Yeah, absolutely. I know there's been a big, big move of unionization across Gannett's newsrooms, many of which have organized with the News Guild, which is a sector of Communication Workers of America. And so we stay organized with each other and we communicate pretty regularly. That's one of, you know, maybe the benefits you wouldn't think of a union is just that connection that you get outside of work. You get to talk more candidly about what's going on. And especially across the country, we compare notes with each other and we talk about how different things across Gannett are affecting our individual newsrooms. And so, yeah, there has been a big wave of unionization. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but I know it's big, and I know it's, you know, doubled and maybe even tripled in the past 5-10 years. You know, many of the Gannett company's biggest newsrooms have unionized and are unionized. And so it's a lot of, you know, like I mentioned earlier, slow, drawn out bargaining that isn't the most productive, that ends with, at least I can speak for the worker side, ends with us in frustration, feeling like we weren't heard, feeling like we won't actually get many of the things that we're asking for at the table. And as you just mentioned, Lori, those things shouldn't be unachievable or unimaginable. You know, we're often spoken to at the bargaining table, at least in my experience, as if these things are laughable or some pipe dream. Like, there's no world where, you know, a journalism or a media company could ever agree to some of the things we're asking for. And we just know that's not true, right? It's about where the resources are at and where they choose to allocate them. And you bring up things that you once had in your contract at the Blade, and that's case in point, in my view. So yeah, I mean, there's many, if not most, unions who have unionized with Gannett in the last 3-4 years don't have first contracts. Some places have been waiting 4 years, 3 years, 2 years. There's places where they've unionized and they don't have a first contract years after they won their elections. We know Gannett doesn't voluntarily recognize unions. So we know Gannett doesn't tend to voluntarily recognize unions. Folks have to go through an election process where they garner the support of their colleagues and go to a vote. But before that, before you do go to a vote and have the election, there's a chance for the company to voluntarily recognize you. And that's where they're just saying, you know, we see that our employees, our journalists want this. We respect that. We'll grant you that recognition. And then you're certified as a union. That doesn't tend to happen in Gannett. So there is a trend of union busting in Gannett. You know, there's no way to put that lightly. They fight against their employees when they choose to unionize. They fight it tooth and nail. And they do everything they can. They put, you know, tons of money into fighting unionization. So from the get-go, from the outset, there's tension, there's friction, and there's pushback. And so it's not surprising to see that even once you're unionized, and once you've gone through the perfectly legal and, you know, process that you have a right to, where all of your colleagues come together and say, this is what we want, you're still going to see pushback for years to come. And the delaying of contracts is such a problem, because while it's great to unionize and earn that status quo protection that you get the day you're certified, you have that power and you have that communication with your colleagues now, and you have so many things just by unionizing, the contract is what you need to be able to have a voice in the workplace, increase your protections and, you know, the benefits of working there, build that trust and, you know, respect with each other between the company and the union, which might sound laughable now, but it shouldn't be, right? You know, we all have a right to that. And that just doesn't seem to come with Gannett.
Yeah, it sounds like the blocks. Allie, can you give us a background of what they're doing to your union?
Yeah, I mean, they are trying to bust the union. I think that's pretty clear. This is not so much about money for them, though they like to say it is. This is about wresting control from the union. They want complete control over the newsroom. They want complete control over what they can and can't do. Laying people off, for example, without regard for seniority is one big thing that the union busting lawyer comes into bargaining and says, we simply cannot bend on that. I mean, that's an incredibly important protection, not just to protect people who have invested their entire careers into the Post-Gazette, but to protect people from retribution for union activity. You know, if they can lay off these senior folks who are putting a lot of effort into the union, they can come up with excuses for why they did that, which would protect them from the legal ramifications of retribution.
Yeah, so at the Blade, we've just kind of been negotiating the whole time, and they have some similar tactics, but they haven't imposed conditions on us. So we're kind of in a, you know, I guess on a different timeline, but we're dealing with the same company. So, you know, we don't want to get to the point of a strike, but you don't know what's in their pocket and what they want to, you know.
Is striking a rumor right now? Is it a consideration?
I mean, you have to plan for anything, but I don't
you
think,
hope not.
Yeah, I hope not. And I don't think we're to that point, but I don't, you know, I mean, nobody wants to strike, and I can obviously, Allie, you can probably back that up, that like, it's a point that, you know, it's a last resort, you know, you don't want to, you don't want to get to that point. But.
So let's talk about what the benefits are for being in a union. How do unions help the working lives of journalists? What exactly are we fighting for?
I'm happy to speak to this point first.
Okay, Jenna, go ahead.
Yeah, the number one way I think unions help journalists and help journalism, you know, I talked to you a bit about this, Lori, when we set this up. I just feel so strongly that as much as it's about increasing our own rights and protections as journalists in the workplace, which can look a myriad of ways. In Indianapolis, our contract requires managers to change our schedules within a certain window of time to make sure we're not getting, you know, yanked around depending on what's going on with the news. It gives us a little more consistency in that way. There's plenty in our contract about severance and 401k and, you know, our sick vacation holiday time, all the, you know, life at work sort of benefits. But then I think, again, outside of that, and I'm happy to go into that more, but outside of just how it affects us as people working at a company, it's really, to me, especially with this broad wave of unionization, about stopping the erosion of local journalism. We know that resources continue to diminish, but at the same time, we see these media conglomerates using the resources in ways that we don't think is going to end in the thriving of local journalism, right? So unions can push for investment from the ground up, investing in the workers, investing in good quality journalism that changes the community, makes a difference. That's what we think people will invest in and what will ultimately bring back quality local journalism, you know? And so unionization can fight turnover and retention. It can reward people for staying longer with pay scales that reward seniority and commitment to a community and to a newspaper. Yeah. And so to me, it's just, you know, specifically with the intersection of unionizing and journalism, it's about the community. It's about saving the journalism we're doing, keeping it going, making it better, right? We're always in this survival mode, in this just trying to, you know, dig and claw to keep the status quo. But what about making it better, right? We can dream it better. We can do better still and put out even better storytelling and cover our communities better. And so when we're unionized and when we're strongest and when we feel we have a voice at the table and we have this kind of democratic workplace, we can do our best work. And I don't remember a time in recent history where that was more important. You know, we're coming off of this wave of, you know, attack on news and journalism, rampant misinformation with social media, all of it. And so I feel so strongly that whatever we need to do to make sure local journalism continues and is preserved and is invested in a righteous way, you know, we should. And to me, unionizing is a huge part of that.
Yeah, I definitely wanted to talk about the erosion of local journalism. I think without our local media, our democracy suffers. News deserts are expansive. And I'm really worried about the general public not getting the information they need to make informed decisions, particularly in this very toxic political environment. Are there any other concerns or about that?
I mean, I echo everything Jenna just said. Yeah, so I echo basically everything Jenna said. One of the things that I didn't realize was not across the board in the journalism world, because I've only interned at the Oklahoma and in the Blade, and then I've only worked as a staff photographer at the Blade. I mean, at the Blade, even with all the stuff we deal with, our mileage, and especially as a photographer, it's the IRS rate, which I didn't realize until, I think a few years ago, that some places are still stuck in the, you know, like the 90s rate, which at the moment, the IRS rate, and it's gone up during, I think last year, it went up during the year. It's now up to 65.5 cents per mile, which I was seeing some people who had like 20 cents per mile, which, you know, that adds up when you're using your own car and when you're using, you know, when you're paying for your gas to get to assignments and maybe going to Cleveland or, you know, Akron or, you know, far off places where you're driving quite a bit.
Well, even that $900 that we are getting every April 1st for the wear and tear of our cars, you know, that's union progress.
Yeah. So it's one of those things that you really notice, though. Where,
yeah.
I'll say too, I think an important point with this is, especially like in Pittsburgh, it's become such a cliche because everyone says it, but it's true. Pittsburgh is a union town. And I think us being unionized journalists gives us so much respect within the community. And that's really important to us as photographers in particular, because we are out there every single day you know, talking to people, and people let us into their lives because they respect us as union journalists. Because, you know, I hear it all the time when I go out into the community, especially now when I'm going out working for PUP. So PUP is the Pittsburgh Union Progress. It's our strike publication that we're running. And I tell people who I'm with, and they know about the strike, and I hear it all the time. You know, my dad, my grandfather, my great, great grandfather were in unions. Because of that, they would never talk to someone crossing the picket line. And in the future, after the strike, they're not going to talk to people who did cross the picket line. And I think that goes into just being part of a union. We have a certain level of respect in the community that's really important, and that continues the strength of the newspaper if it has a strong union, especially in these cities that have such strong union histories.
Can you share with us your experience of being on strike? How has that affected you personally and your fellow photojournalists and journalists? How are you guys coping?
I mean, it's hard. There's no way around that. It's difficult giving up our full paychecks. It's difficult just not going to work every day. I mean, no one gets into this for riches and fame. You know, we all do it because we love it. And so it's hard just not doing the job every day. You know, I feel like I'm missing out on the career that I am so passionate about, that I chose, you know. And of course, there's difficult financial aspects to it. There's difficult things about just the insecurity of not knowing what's going to happen. But I have to say, like, we have set up extremely strong support systems for each other. And that's what's so uplifting about this. You know, we have these structures to where no one is missing out on paying their bills. No one is going to miss their mortgage payment. No one is going to feel like they can't go to the doctor if they need it, because we have those support systems in place for each other. And that really, I think, illustrates the benefit of a union. Because even in a strike, or, you know, even in a situation where maybe someone gets laid off unfairly, I know, like, if it were me, I know the union would have my back, and the union has had my back during this strike. So even on the days when it's really hard and it's like, I wish I had more money in my bank account, I wish I was going to work, it's seeing my fellow workers fighting for this every single day is just so uplifting, and that keeps me going. And also having the union progress in place is also really helpful, because I do get to do my job, not as often, but I do get to cover the things that are important for me to cover. It's a roller coaster of emotions, because some days it's really hard and it sucks, but like other days, you know you're doing the right thing, and that feels really good. So,
can you tell us a little bit more about the union progress?
A lot of our structures that have been implemented during the strike were actually put into place in 2020 when we were basically considering going on strike. That ended up not happening, but the Union Progress was actually created at that time, and it never was put into effect. So the Pittsburgh Union Progress is our strike publication. It started pretty much immediately after we went on strike, and it is just a way for us to get the news out there. And we see it as we are trying to be a voice for the everyday person, whereas, you know, the Post-Gazette is reporting on the Kentucky Derby, which there's nothing wrong with that, but it's, you know, not so much, that doesn't affect the daily lives of folks in Pittsburgh. And we are reporting on that kind of stuff. We have some of the best sports reporters, high school sports reporters in the country, I'd say, and on strike with us. And so they are reporting on, you know, the sons and daughters of union workers, you know, out there in the city. So that's the kind of thing that we're trying to focus on is, you know, reporting on the things that affects everyday people, and not so much competing with the Post-Gazette, but filling the gap, because the Post-Gazette is not doing this stuff because people aren't talking to them. You know, politicians aren't talking to them. Other union workers in healthcare, in the teachers union, the restaurant unions, you know, I could go on. But so we're providing a source for those folks to continue getting the news out there that matters to them.
Strike publications, I know, have been pretty big in the history of newspapers too. I know that, I don't remember the exact year and I don't remember the exact name, but I know the Blade, I've been in the Toledo Guild office, and I want to say they have a printed copy of, I think it was in the 1960s or so. It's kind of, it's like a point in history of, you know, of the Blades Guild. I mean, our guild has been here 1934 or so. So we were blessed that the people who fought for that in 1930, and it was a very uphill battle back in, you know, 1930, and the fact that we're still around.
There are strike papers that turned into legitimate publications that are still functioning to this day. So there's a long history.
Do you have anything like that, Jenna?
So do you want me to speak to whether or not we've ever considered striking, or whether I'm sure if we, you know, went on strike, we would have one, right? I think it's in the blood of journalists to keep doing journalism and to show that we can, even when we're not getting our paychecks. So yeah, I think if we did, we would.
When Dave Zapotosky retired last month, I went in to the newsroom, I think for the first or second time since I retired in August of 2020. And all over the newsroom are posters plastered about the union and the blocks. And so there's a bulletin board in there that is really huge. And I actually took a picture of it, and I'm going to post it with the blog article on the ONPA website. Me being military, when I first realized that you can speak out against the company you're working for, at first I'm like, that's biting the hand that bit you, because that's the military in me, you know? You're not allowed to speak out against your
superiors.
But of course, over 26 years, that has changed. Unionizing is the one way to protect us as workers.
Well, I was going to say, but speaking of bulletin boards, I mean, I know in Pittsburgh, that was the JRB story, where he saw something, it said shame on the blocks. It's a pretty similar report that, you know, we have, that the guild has messages on. You know, he came in and tirated about, you know, so I mean,
yeah, that went pretty viral
with his daughter, his, like, I forget how old she was, but very young daughter. Late at night, that was, I had just been at the Post Gazette for a couple months when that happened, and that was a wake-up call for sure.
The point you were getting at, Lori, is, you know, we're all protected under Section 7 rights to organize unions and to have unions. But then what you're speaking to is collective action and mobilizing and actually pushing and coming together to pressure the company into conceding and coming halfway to give us more of what we want, right? So when we're just repeatedly being slow walked at the bargaining table, or having, you know, 95% of the things we propose be rejected, and they come back with one thing that's so modified it doesn't look anything like what we had originally proposed, when that stuff comes up, and when you're not getting anywhere, we know, and there's tons and tons of proof to back it up, that the only way you get what you want, especially in the face of immobilizing. And so in Indy, we meet every week about mobilizing and about how, what are we doing beyond the bargaining table to get what we want? And that's where, you know, the rally came from, where you heard the bit of audio earlier. That didn't come overnight. That came after 2 years of this stuff off and on. And so we talk on a national level about what we can do as a bigger group across Gannett to pressure the company. And then we, of course, do it in our own ways. I know an example outside of the contract realm, we were made to keep paying parking despite the office being closed during COVID. So when the office closed for quite a long time and we weren't actually allowed to work in there at all, we weren't even back to a hybrid model yet, early pandemic, we kept paying for our parking garage, and there wasn't a clear way to cancel. We were kind of given, you know, mixed answers on, well, if you cancel, we don't know that you'll get that rate back, because we get a bit of a discount, but it's still expensive. It comes out of every paycheck. It's a downtown Indianapolis parking garage. It's, you know, they're charging $50 for that thing during some special events. So it's not cheap. And, you know, we just, as a group, because we had the I don't know, medium of our union, and we had that structure already built out, you know, it wasn't a contract issue, but it was something that we would not let up on. And we escalated our things around it. You know, we were in the newsroom pasting our parking garage receipts on the boss's door. If you, you know, say you canceled your parking and you were just paying for meters around downtown, we were, you know, we did all these different things. And so that's one example of, we mobilized around a very specific issue, and eventually we came to, you know, an agreement with the company. We sat down and filled out like this official memorandum of agreement, and they, you know, decided to reduce the parking going forward. They didn't pay us back for, you know, for some of us, it was between $1,000 and $2,000 that we paid for this parking garage that we most often didn't use. And so the solution we came to was to have it reduced going forward. But that's a win, right? That's money back in our pockets when many of us are already pretty underpaid. So you can gather up around something very specific, push, and win. I mean, people in unions do it every single day, and it's necessary. It's not something that's like a bonus activity, right? It's the only thing that will win us what we want you know, as time goes on, it seems to be increasingly true.
Can each of you give some basic general tips on what it takes to maybe start a union or keep a union strong or fight to keep a union that is already existing? Alexandra, why don't you start?
Sure. So this kind of goes along with what I already talked about in terms of the support systems that we put in place with the strike. But I think a big part of keeping a union strong is showing people what a union can do for them. And I think we are showing that, and though to kind of speak to what tends to be the elephant in the room, like we, plenty of people have crossed the picket line, and that is unfortunate and disappointing. But I think at the end of this, they will see that we have gained so many things that will benefit those folks who haven't been alongside with us fighting for them, but they're still going to get those protections, even though they weren't involved in earning them. And I'll say too, like I wasn't super involved with the union before the strike happened. So I think sometimes getting people involved requires something going wrong, because up until that point, I just enjoyed the benefits that the union had earned for me without doing any of the work. And the strike forced me to be in a position where, you know, I had to start doing some of the work. So I can't really speak to how to start a union or how to build a union, because I wasn't involved in that, to be completely honest with you. But the reason I'm out on strike is because I want to help and be alongside the folks that have earned the things that we have enjoyed over the years.
I was not part of building the union, our union, because again, I wasn't around in the 1930s. But I think from my basic experience for the last 6 years, seeing the persistent, you have to be persistent. The other side, the company is always going to be persistent on pushing back on you. So you have to kind of, you know, even though it seems like at times, like, why are we even doing this? You have to, you know, just keep on keeping on.
Well, you have to have some thick skin for one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that I would not be a good union leader because I'm too nice and naive. So, but I would be a good follower. You know, give me a piece of chalk and I'll go chalk the sidewalk and I'll go carry a sign. You know, I'll put out on social media when I need to do, but we need leaders.
Yeah.
Like Jenna.
And especially in photo, because I was going to say Jenna, it's kind of surprising too, because most of the time, basically all the presidents I've had at the Blade, you know, they've all been on the writing side or editing, you know, copy editing. It's awesome to see a photographer be the president of a union, which... Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah,
that's how I got involved. I was a shop steward who primarily was the liaison between leaders and other stewards in photo. So they saw that I was showing up to things and seemed to care and want to make things better. And I started as a union steward. I think I served as vice president, as an elected, you know, officer of the local, as vice president for a bit, and now president. But I think, you know, to form a union, you just have to want to make the place better. And you have to have that desire for a say in your workplace. And you can't have a say in your workplace with just four elected officers, right? That's not everyone. That's not going to accurately reflect your workplace. So I'm really excited to see the News Guild, which is, again, the sector of CWA that so many are organized with. I think that's the exciting thing about, you know, with the News Guild, the sector of CWA, when they're organizing new unions and working with journalists to go through the process, it really is a member-led effort from the start. And what I mean by that is that everyone is involved, everyone shares the work, everyone voices their opinion, everyone gets a say when decisions are made, and that's what builds power. And I said this before, but you can't accurately reflect the mass with just four elected officers. And so we've made that shift in Indianapolis over the last 5 or 6 years. We had some leaders who really put in a lot of work. Emily Hopkins was one. Natalia Contreras kept the ball rolling with this, but they really put in the work to get our model back to that member, you know, journalist-led model where everyone has a say and everyone's splitting up the work. And that's what it's really about. And that's what's, you know, the most powerful about it. And we talk as if a union is a service model at times. We say the union won this for you, or the benefits and protections the union affords you or fought to have for you. And as often as we can, we try to shy away from that service model, because while there are the cut and dry things where there are elected officers who might put in more time. You do have wine garden rights because of your union status. And if you don't know what wine garden rights are, basically, if you ever find yourself in a disciplinary situation at work, you're guaranteed a representative from the union. That's someone who will go with you, who will be in those meetings, which can often be tense, and the power can be imbalanced in those meetings where the worker's in some kind of trouble and the boss has kind of a one-up just by the nature of that. You're guaranteed a union representative to go with you. So we train all of our stewards to be that union representative. And so that's another right that you're afforded. But by and large, when it comes to this collective action and making real change and pushing the limits a little bit, it's all about the members, and as much involvement and buy-in as you have is kind of connected to the result you'll get. And so as far as unionizing, there's an email address with, and if it's okay, I'll share this now. There's an email address with the News Guild of CWA. It's organize@newsguild.org. I help organize new unions, so that's why I know quite a bit about this, but you just have to get on a call and start to talk about it and learn about the process. That's step one. And again, there's nothing that qualifies you other than wanting to make a change, wanting to bring your coworkers together to all have a say. There are really strategic ways to get your coworkers on board and to kind of call them to action in a way that will have longevity and will last. We learn about conversations and how there's a way to craft your conversations that gets to the heart of the issues. It gets folks thinking about why they need to make a change, why you can't stay the same anymore in your workplace, and why, you know, how this will help them. And then, you know, furthermore, have them show up and help do the work. And that's how these things last, is by everyone taking a little bit of the work.
Briefly, is there any comment all three of you want to make before we call it an episode? Alexandra.
I think we touched on pretty much everything that's important. I think specifically because this is a podcast for photographers, I just think it's so important for us in particular to have these protections in place, because we're going out into the world every single day and things happen, you know, and we need people on our side to protect us. I mean, without going too much into examples, but like, you know, COVID is a really good example of that, that, you know, the union was there to say, to remind us every single day, if you feel unsafe, you don't have to take this assignment. You know, we have those protections in place. So I think that, you know, we are in the community every day. We are part of the community every day. We need to be able to afford to live in the communities that we're covering. And so that's why this is also important. That's why I've been on strike for 7 months, you know, because I want to be able to invest my life here in Pittsburgh. You know, I love working for the Post-Gazette, and that's why we're fighting for it.
Especially on the cost of living side of things. I mean, Toledo is really, really affordable compared to a lot of places, but my rent went up, I think it was like 0.25%, or it was like 25%, which, you know,
that's a lot.
And there wasn't anything really added to my apartment, you know, it's still. So
you just want a living, working
wage.
Yeah,
yeah. Yep. And definitely on the pandemic side of things. And you can comment on that too, because you worked through the pandemic for the most part at the Blade.
Yeah. And them trying to force us back into the newsroom before anybody was ready. You know, that was an issue. Photojournalists were out and about, so we really didn't affect us at all because we're normally out and about. But the journalists were terrified to go back into the newsroom, and the management was trying to force them to go back.
That was such a great point about the pandemic. I think the pandemic probably spurred places to organize that might not have otherwise. I mean, I remember we did have special meetings and special conversations, and our elected officers really fought during, especially early COVID, to make sure photojournalists had a voice at the table. I mean, we were thrown into everything while others weren't, right? And I mean, even just saying, making sure, whether it was mid-level management or top editor or even beyond that, like company representative, making sure they knew what we were out doing, how it was affecting us. You know, they tried to get things like hazard pay and, you know, make sure the company was going to bargain fairly about when and if it did require us to come back in the office. I mean, just being there to say, hey, but what about us? Do you know what we're doing? Do you know what's going on? I mean, it really was like a voice for us. And at that time, you know, that's when people willing to step up and be the leader is so important, because we were out going through it, right? So great point from Alexandra. No, I think there's a wave of new unionizing. The labor movement has changed a lot. We're at a time when the country has fewer unionized workplaces than ever before in our history. And yet we also see that somewhere in the 70s, there's, you know, somewhere in the 70s for percentage of whether or not folks support the idea of unions and whether they would support a union in their workplace. So that is, you know, kind of this disconnect, but all we can do is, you know, one group at a time, one conversation at a time. I feel really hopeful about that. And I do think we might enter a new era of this. We're seeing across all industries, folks coming together in this way. And so if you have a poor past experience with a union, or you have some part of you that feels against this effort, I would just encourage you to give it a second chance and to have that conversation and to just show up and find out what's going on. If your workplace is unionizing or has one and you're not, you know, a dues paying member, give it a chance. Talk to someone you've never talked to before who's involved. Don't assume that, you know, what happened last year even indicates what's going on now, right? Like, these things are fluid and they change. So stay open-minded and show up and voice your opinion, right? So if you aren't pleased with what's going on, or you don't, you know, agree with how something's going, come and, you know, give your voice, because any well-run union is all about democracy in that way. And we need everyone.
Thank you, Jenna Watson, Kurt Stice, and Alexandra Wimley. I can't express enough how appreciative we are that you took the time to share your stories and shared plight concerning your unions. I hope it offered insight on the power and struggle of unions in our newsrooms. Keep up the good fight. Well, that wraps up another episode of The Buckeye Visualist. I am your host, Lori King. Keep an F2-point mind, everybody.
You've been listening to The Buckeye Visualist Podcast.